Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Drew. 35, 30.
One of the end zone punt. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And so glad you could join us for Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could join us as we'll be breaking down the Giants-Colts matchup over the next 60 minutes. We'll also get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can also follow and interact with us on Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your comments and questions on Twitter a little bit later on. But right off the top here is the Giants now look ahead to their Monday night game against the Indianapolis Colts. We bring in Kevin Bowen from Colts.com. Kevin, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's going good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, we do appreciate the time, Kevin, and let's start with the last game for the Indianapolis Colts. 2 weeks ago, they shut out the Bengals 27-0, and then this was a game this past weekend, you scratch your head as they give up 51 points to the Steelers. Was this just a game that they're going to chalk up and say, hey, they didn't play their A game, or is this a sign of perhaps some struggles on the defensive end that could be showcased moving forward?
Yeah, I think a part of it is just life in the NFL. There's so much parity in this league, and we've seen so many teams this year struggle from week to week. I mean, New England a month ago was getting shellacked by the Kansas City Chiefs, and now they're arguably one of the hottest teams in the league, along with Denver. So I think for the Colts defense right now, it's looking at what you did during that five-game winning streak before Sunday. They were able to get after the quarterback during that stretch. They got great cornerback play from Vontae Davis and Greg Bowler. They had 20 sacks in those five games, and that's kind of been the biggest question mark coming into the year is how will the pass rush be? Struggled in the first 2 weeks of the year, only getting one sack against Denver and Philadelphia, and obviously against those two offenses, you got to get after the quarterback. And on Sunday, Big Ben was hit just once in 49 pass attempts, and when you let a guy like that, a potential Hall of Famer, sit back there for 4, 5, 6 seconds at a time, he's going to pick you apart. And that's exactly what he did. So the key going into New York is the health of Vontae Davis. He means so much to his defense from being able to be a lockdown corner out on an island. And if you can kind of let him be on an island, he can take away, you know, the top receiver from the opposing team. That allows Chuck Pagano's unit to be very, very creative in the front seven and get after the quarterback.
Let's talk about the availability of your guys for a second, because, you know, here at the Giants, we get a pre-practice injury report every Wednesday before the guys actually go out there and do their work. What can you tell us right now in terms of what the status is of the Colts injuries across the board?
Well, the Colts are about to practice today for their first practice of the week, but basically the four big guys going into Monday night will be Trent Richardson, Reggie Wayne, Eric Walden, outside linebacker, and then Vontae Davis. We'll start with Richardson. He was active last week but didn't take any snaps, and he's the Colts starting running back. Him and Ahmad Bradshaw pretty much split reps throughout the year, but Trent has been the starter and has played well as of late. Suffered a hamstring injury at the end of the Bengals game, so did not play against the Steelers. Chuck Pagano said on Monday that he expects him to go, so the Colts should have their starting running back duo back, if you will, in Bradshaw and Richardson. Reggie Wayne is the next guy. He missed the Steelers game with an elbow injury. And he's your security blanket for Andrew Luck. T.Y. Hilton is the team's leading receiver. He's the league's leading receiver. But Wayne is a guy that this team looks to on third downs, looks to in chaotic situations. He had been having a pretty good year coming off the ACL injury, but the elbow injury definitely held him back a bit during the Bengals game. He did not practice all last week. Chuck Pagano said he's hopeful that Wayne will be able to play on Monday night. Eric Walden is a guy that Chuck Pagano labeled as week-to-week. Again, with Robert Mathis out of the lineup, Walden has been key at the outside linebacker spot, setting the edge in the run game and then getting after the quarterback as well. So week to week with the hip flexor on Walden, if he doesn't go, the Colts are definitely a little bit thin at outside linebacker. Got some special teams guys and Andy Studebaker and Jonathan Newsom that will have to be called upon if Walden can't go. And then Vontae Davis, I think, is the biggest injury to watch throughout the week. Chuck Pagano said day-to-day with a knee injury. It was kind of weird how it unfolded on Sunday. It looked like he banged knees against the Steelers, came out. First, they listed him as questionable to come back to the game, and then just a few minutes later, they said he was out. So only played 11 snaps, and again, like I said earlier, you really saw what his loss can do to this Colts defense. He's such a unique talent and had been playing at an all-pro level this year as one of the top corners in the league. So I think seeing if Davis can practice is going to be the big thing. I know the Giants' passing attack, you know, it isn't one of the league's best, but still, for this defense to play at a high level like they had been doing during that winning streak, Davis has got to be out there.
If Davis is able to go, do you think that they would lock him down on Beckham, who, albeit he's fast and speedy and looks to be a deep threat, hasn't proven a lot because he's only played for a few weeks with the Giants? Or do you suspect they'll just play straight up or zone, or maybe for that matter, I don't know why they would stick him on Reuben Randall, quite honestly, because Randall's only averaging about 9 yards a catch. But how do you think they would employ Davis if he's in the lineup?
Yeah, I mean, the Colts rarely shadow guys, and again, they have played the Demaryius Thomases and, you know, the Steve Smiths and the Jeremy Maclins so far this season. Even Antonio Brown wasn't really shadowed. Davis is the guy that plays on his left side, and then Greg Toler, the other corner, plays on the right side. For the most part, I think they're going to leave those guys there, and man coverage is definitely something that the Colts pride themselves on. And when you have Davis and Toler healthy, those guys have proven themselves to be able to play, you know, pretty good defense. You know, listening to Jerry Reese's comments earlier in the week, it definitely sounds like the Giants are going to want to take some shots deep. So if, you know, Beckham or Randall, like you mentioned, those would be, I think, the big guys to watch for. But I don't think Davis necessarily would be shadowing any guy. But I do think this Colts defense has got to be on their edge at the back end, knowing that the Giants' emphasis could be on taking some shots deep on Monday night to get that offense going.
Talking with Kevin Bowen here on Giants.com from Colts.com as we look ahead to the Colts-Giants game on Monday Night Football. Kevin, you also mentioned the fact that Eric Walden is banged up, one of their key linebackers, and I was looking over the numbers. Nearly half the sacks this season from the Colts pass rush comes from that linebacking unit. If Walden can't go, who do you see picking up the slack, and how significant of a loss is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a big loss. I mean, this is a tough, you know, hard-nosed football player that I think the guys on the defense really respect. He's not afraid to get into it down there in the trenches. Again, not only getting after the quarterback, but also setting the edge. The big guy on the outside of the Colts rush defense. Bjorn Werner is going to be the guy starting opposite him. He was the Colts first-round draft pick from last year. Kind of had a slow rookie year. He was hobbled a little bit by plantar fasciitis. Injury, only had 2.5 sacks, and then really came on here in the past couple weeks. Had a couple sacks against the Ravens, had a game-ending fumble against Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Texans on Thursday Night Football. So he's kind of stepped his game up a bit. So he's going to be the guy that will start opposite Walden if Walden can't go. The other guys to watch out for would be Jonathan Newsom. He was a fifth-round pick for this team. He's had a couple moments here in the past couple games just in passing situations. That he's starting to play more in the base defense and definitely on passing downs. And then Andy Studebaker is the other guy that Chuck Pagano mentioned. He's basically a core special teams guy for this team. He's played in the league for, I think, about 7 or 8 years. So, again, it would be a big loss. The Colts are dealing with some injuries in the front seven. Obviously, Robert Mathis is out for the season. Arthur Jones just got back in the lineup as well. So the front seven hasn't been as healthy as they thought it would be, you know, definitely going into the start of the year. And if Walden is out, that's a big loss for this team.
I think it's time we ask him about the two former Giants, don't you, Lance?
I would agree. I think it's safe to.
Ahmad Bradshaw, for those of you tuning in around the country interested in the Giants, former players, Bradshaw's got 371 yards rushing, leading the Colts, 5-yard average, 2 touchdowns. Hakeem Nicks, 18 catches for $1.68. Averaging under 10 yards a catch, seems like he's much like Reuben Randall is these days, and only 2 touchdowns. Those are the numbers. Could you tell us exactly what you see on the field from those guys?
Yeah, I think we'll start with Bradshaw. And I mean, I remember watching him when he was with the Giants, and you couldn't help but enjoy his running style,
how tough
he played, and this fan base and his teammates definitely embrace him, and everything he's gone through to come back from the neck injury in the offseason. That was a very serious injury, and for him to be playing, let alone playing at such a high level this year, is pretty remarkable. And he's been a major threat out of the backfield for this team. 6 receiving touchdowns already in 2014. I think the NFL record for a running back for a single season is 9. I mean, he still runs with that hard nature, downhill, angry style that I know Giants fans have seen and now Colts fans are getting to see as well. So he's just been a huge pickup for this team. I think he's helped Trent Richardson a ton. Growing up and kind of, you know, guys in the locker room, they feed off his energy and just feed off his, he wants to play football. I mean, he would play if the game was a doubleheader on a con.
We know that all too well. You know, I do want to ask you, though, does he miss any practices during the week? You remember here when he was with the Giants, he often had to take the entire week off, and if they were lucky to get him in on one practice before Sunday, they would do so. That was one of the reasons, quite honestly, with the durability factor and the amount of time he would miss in practice, why I believe that they felt, in terms of his money value, it was time to move on. What's the deal in Indy?
Chuck Pagano has been giving a veteran rest day on Wednesdays to a Bradshaw, DeQuell Jackson, the starting inside linebacker. Reggie Wayne as well has been getting that Wednesday off. The thing that Ahmad talks about, though, is how much having that time off last year helped the nagging foot injuries that he obviously dealt with during his time with the Giants. So he feels young. According to him, he feels young. He feels like a guy that having that time off last year, obviously he wanted to be on the football field, but it did help him rest some of those other nagging injuries that have kind of plagued him during his time with the Giants. But then last Wednesday with Trent Richardson sidelined to practice, the Colts needed Bradshaw to practice, and he did. So, again, I think it's just been pretty much just a rest day for him on those Wednesdays. He didn't take really his first hit until, I believe, the week three of the preseason. And so, again, you just didn't know what you were going to get out of him.
Yeah.
A neck injury for a guy that runs and plays like he does is just so difficult to judge. But, again, the Colts have gotten every ounce out of him that they could ask for, and he's really been one of the X factors of this offense and a major reason why this offense is one of the best in the NFL.
What do you got on Nix?
Nix has definitely struggled a bit in terms of getting on the same page with Andrew Luck. I thought it would be interesting to see coming into the season how the Colts would divvy up all these skill guys. I mean, we talked about the running backs. Dwayne Allen is one of those, you know, games really young emerging tight ends as well. The Colts drafted Dante Moncrief in the third round, an impressive guy in terms of body size and speed. He emerged last week, 7 catches for 113 yards. And Nix, he's gotten the targets. I believe he has 38 targets on the year, but just hasn't been able to get on the same page with Luck. And that's something that we saw really dating back to training camp in the preseason. I know he had, you know, his best performance of the year was in the preseason game against the Giants.
We remember.
And, you guys saw it firsthand. It looked like there was a little something to that game beforehand. And with T.Y. Hilton and Reggie Wayne out of the lineup in that game, I mean, Nix was Andrew Luck's go-to guy, and he looked like the guy that last played at Lucas Oil Stadium during that Super Bowl run that the Giants had. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch come Monday night. If Reggie Wayne can't go, do we see Nix finally get on the same page with Andrew Luck? Again, Moncrief, T.Y. Hilton, both those guys last week were over 100 yards receiving. Nix, he just couldn't get involved as much in the offense. So I think the Colts can get by without Nix, you know, being that consistent guy. But again, if Wayne is out for any period of time, you need that third receiver. So maybe going back to MetLife Stadium might light a fire in him like it did when he played the Giants in the preseason. But I think both those guys, it goes without saying, they're going to be ready to go on Monday night. I know both of them are on the conference call today with the New York media, and usually it's always Andrew Luck. So I know how much it means to those two, but also to Giants fans.
Those calls start in about a half hour. Bradshaw and Nix are back-to-back. So, yeah, you know that the New York media is waiting to get a hold of those two.
I'm talking with Kevin Bowen from Colts.com. And, Kevin, when it came to Akiem Nix last season with his final year here with the Giants, you know, he failed to get separation from a lot of the opposing defensive backs. Now, you alluded to the fact that he hasn't been on the same page with Andrew Luck. From a physical standpoint, though, what are you seeing on the practice field? I mean, is he getting that separation? Does he seem fully healthy? Because that has been an issue for him over the last few years with the Giants.
Right. I mean, he definitely looks healthy and makes plays. I mean, he made a ton of plays during training camp. I really can't recall many days that he sat out during even OTAs and then into training camp as well, and he made plays. Now, the Colts secondary was banged up a lot during the offseason. Vontae Davis didn't participate really at all midway through OTAs and on. Greg Toler was really the only healthy starting member of the Colts secondary. But, yeah, I mean, he has shown flashes of it, and you don't hear any qualms about him inside of that locker room. Chuck Pagano is always praising him. But, again, it just looks like from communication, from a timing standpoint, him and Andrew Luck just haven't been as in sync as some of the other skill guys. The pick six on Sunday is a perfect example of that. It looked like Nix had a comeback route. William Gettys, Steelers cornerback, just stepped right in front of that passes. you've seen balls kind of sail over his head a little bit. He did make a very impressive catch on a third down early in the first half when the Colts needed to move the chains on Sunday. So, I mean, physically, again, he hasn't showed up on the injury report. He's been a guy that's practiced a ton, so I don't think any of those things are really limiting him. I think it's just getting on the same page, getting familiar with his offense, because, again, you have so many skill guys on this offense. The Colts lead the NFL. 8 guys have caught at least 15 balls. No other team has that. Knicks is one of those guys, but, again, he just still hasn't been as consistent of a guy as maybe you would expect.
Dante Moncrief, who obviously played a significant role in the Steelers game, who's their third-round pick from this past year. You know, a lot of people may be familiar with him from studying their fantasy lineups this week, trying to pick him up. But from a realistic standpoint, Kevin, what type of a challenge does he pose to this Giants secondary, considering he'll likely fill in for Reggie Wayne much more than Akeem Nicks this week?
Yeah, I mean, he had 12 targets on Sunday in just 40 offensive snaps. The Colts had 66 total. And, again, Andrew Luck was not afraid to throw the ball his way. And this is a very impressive young player. Yeah, I mentioned earlier, 6'2", 220 pounds. He runs a 4.3, 4.4. And you saw it all on display against the Steelers. He had a 52-yard gain with a ton of yards after catch early on in the game. Then he took a hit on a 31-yard touchdown catch from Troy Polamalu and held on to that ball. So, when Moncrief was drafted, and again, this is after the Knicks signing, you were kind of like, where is he going to fit in the mold? You have 3,000-yard receivers. Is Moncrief going to be a guy that's going to get a ton of reps? And the Colts have just had to put him on the field just because you can't say no to his skill set. And he had a great grasp of the offense. It's something that offensive coordinator Pat Hamilton has talked about, which, again, he's only 21 years old. So for a young guy, that's kind of hard to imagine. But, again, he is an SEC type of guy. He made a lot of big plays at Ole Miss. Some of his biggest games were against the SEC's top team. So he's a guy that, again, Andrew Luck is not afraid to turn to in clutch situations. Sunday was really his coming out party. So if Reggie Wayne doesn't go on Monday night, again, that weight is going to fall on guys like Moncrief and Knicks again. Can one of them or, you know, two of them emerge on Monday night against a pretty good Giants secondary, it looks like? Because everyone knows what you're going to get from T.Y. Hilton. I mean, he's one of the league's top receivers. He definitely established himself as a true number one threat, not just a deep ball guy. So again, he's going to receive a ton of attention, I think, from the Giants secondary. And if Wayne can't go, Moncrief and Knicks are going to have to make some plays.
See, I'm going to let you in on a little secret out there in Indy, and obviously Lance knows about this, but you know, when I had my want list for the Giants going into the draft, I had Zach Martin as their first-round guy, and, of course, he winds up going to Dallas. And I had Moncrief as a potential third-round guy for the Giants because I thought he could be the big-time, big-play, explosive receiver that they could use. Instead, they wound up going for the receiver in the first round, and now I'm forced to watch Zach Martin and Moncrief back-to-back weeks against the Giants. So you know how I feel about that. Okay.
Well, I think Martin being a local guy here in Indianapolis, everyone saw him come up through the ranks and knew he was going to be just a 10, 12, 14-year NFL vet.
Oh, there was no doubt. There's no doubt. And Moncrief's going to be good, too. He's going to be good,
too. I mean, he's a guy that really lit it up at the NFL Combine. Again, he was 20 years old coming out of Ole Miss, a young guy. It's kind of funny to look back on when Reggie Wayne made his NFL debut, Dante Moncrief had just celebrated his 8th birthday. And now here he is at the age of 21 making plays at the NFL level. So he's a guy, again, that impressed everyone at the NFL Combine athletically. And now we're seeing kind of his intellect. He's been able to really grasp the Colts offensive system. And when called upon, he has made plays throughout the season.
Kevin, certainly appreciate you having to put up with Paul's venting this morning because, it's something we have to deal with around the facility each and every day. But before we let you go, time of possession has been such a key statistic for the Colts, and it also has been such a key statistic for the Cowboys as Paul was trying to draw connections about Zach Martin. And it's covered up some issues for the Cowboys' defense as well as the Colts' defense over these last few weeks. How important has that statistic been, and do you see the Colts getting back to what's worked for them during that 5-game winning streak this week against the Giants?
Yeah, it's been huge. I mean, some of the time possession stats following games have just been staggering. I mean, close to 40 minutes a game, the Colts have held the ball. Now, on Sunday against Pittsburgh, it was Pittsburgh who held the ball for nearly 40 minutes. And, again, that was a stark contrast to what the Colts have seen. And a major reason why, again, the Colts' offense speaks for itself. They are
They are chewing up, you know, tons of yards, at least 450 total yards per game, and they're doing it on the ground and through the air. But it's what they've done on the defensive side of the ball. They lead the NFL in third down conversions allowed. They had a stretch 4 of 41 third down conversions that they allowed, which, again, is just a mind-boggling stat when you look back at it through NFL ranks. I mean, that's some of the best that any team has ever done through a multiple-week stretch. Then against the Steelers, you gave up 8 of 13. So, again, I think it comes from getting off the field on third down. They've done a great job in doing that. The Steelers game was obviously a bit of an outlier in that. And I think the biggest thing is going to be seeing how the Colts play against Eli Manning. You know, when they played some of the top-tier quarterbacks in the league so far, they've struggled a bit. Well, whether it be Peyton Manning or Ben Roethlisberger or even Nick Foles, they did a good job against Joe Flacco and Andy Dalton. Now on Monday night, they're going to see Eli Manning, which by just looking over his stats, having, you know, one of his better seasons, considering maybe the lack of skill guys that he has. So I think that will be something to watch on Monday night. Can the Colts come into a hostile road environment? The Giants obviously need this win to kind of maintain their spot in the NFC East, and the Colts want to go into their bye week 6-3 because the Patriots come into Lucas Oil Stadium here in a couple weeks, which is going to be a huge game for this team. So a lot at stake on Monday night.
Should be a good one. Kevin Bowen from Colts.com. Kevin, really appreciate the time and the insights. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Kev. I enjoy talking to you.
Absolutely.
We'll see you on Monday.
We will see him on Monday as the Colts and the Giants square off in a bounce-back game opportunity for both teams.
I know his time was limited, so we had to let him go, but one of the other key factors going into this game is that the Colts have a very good special teams unit. And Tom Coughlin has preached and preached and preached to his guys over the course of this season that special teams needs to be more consistent, and that field position has been dramatically different in the Giants' 3 wins and in the Giants' 4 losses. And quite frankly, the Colts are very good at tilting the field. The Giants are going to have to do a better job in the special teams area if they're going to win this game on Monday.
And speaking of special teams, Paul, the Giants haven't made any official announcement, but they did, it appears, or at least they're close to picking up somebody from the Lions practice squad to
Mike
help
Harris.
Special teams.
Yeah, yeah, Mike Harris, the cornerback from Florida State. He's about 5'10 and a half. I think he's 185, 190. He has played outside. He's played some slot. But primarily, when I made a call yesterday to somebody who knows a lot about him, they said to me he's really good in kickoff and punt coverage. And when I heard that, I said, okay, well, A, the Giants certainly need to help tilt the field because they haven't done a good enough job doing that this year. So Tom Coughlin's probably thinking about that. The other thing he's thinking about, and if you watch the Giants-Cowboys game, you know that Chandler Fenner, in one of their dime situations, got locked up with Dez Bryant in the left slot, man-to-man, for a third down, 44-yard pass that tilted the field and I believe was the key play in the game as to why Dallas won that game. Well, guess what? That can't happen because a guy like Chandler Fenner, who was playing like his first or second NFL snap ever, is going to be overmatched in a situation like that against a quality receiver and a quality quarterback. The Giants can't let that happen again. And I think that's also probably one of the reasons why Harris has been added to the roster or will be added to the roster. At least we think so, according to reports out of Detroit. At least this is a guy who's got a little experience. You can't put Fenner out there and expect him, you know, to escape the Lions' den in a play like that. And you know what? Dallas took advantage of it.
And they need help in the secondary because so many guys are banged up.
DRC.
Like DRC. And he'll likely take the place of John Beeson. Once again, as Paul mentioned, nothing official, but we just wanted to throw that out there in case you're hearing about the speculation. We want to remind you that listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now. Enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter Blue for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Well, now we're going to open up the phone lines, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. You can also send in your tweets using hashtag GiantsChat. And to get us going here on a Wednesday, it is Ann in Virginia. Ann, what's happening?
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Where do I start? Because I know I probably won't get to call it a show again. I happen to be off today. But let me start by this. I looked at the stats for Eli Manning Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. All of them have 14 touchdowns. I think Eli has 5 picks. Yeah. And I've seen where those picks came from, balls bouncing off of, you know, a receiver's hands or something like that. So those stats aren't really bad. And I saw that Jerry Reese said that they need to get the ball downfield. So I guess he sort of called Eli out. But I really don't necessarily think I think they're too conservative. And you know how I feel, and not everyone I know, we don't like Tom Coughlin. And I just call it just like that. And I think I want him to back off of Ben McAdoo and let McAdoo do his job, because if Eli's numbers are just as good as theirs, then why do we have a 3-4 record to show for it? And Paul Dottino, I know you have a direct line of Coughlin's ear. Can you answer that question?
Well, yeah.
I'm
going to give you a little time out here. First of all, in terms of Eli, Eli has had a good season. And what he and Coach McAdoo do in terms of going into a game, Tom Coughlin gives Coach McAdoo a philosophy or a general philosophy based on what they learn on Monday, which says, okay, look, this is what we see in the other team. This is what we have and what we see. Now go ahead and formulate your game plan. And Coach McAdoo has tremendous freedom. They did not bring him in here with handcuffs. He has tremendous freedom. Look, he installed a brand new offense. So please, okay, don't misunderstand. Coach Coughlin's not putting handcuffs on Coach McAdoo.
Okay, now let me say this much. I know McAdoo is not going to insert a running back as much as he was inserted. I know that was Coughlin, because I looked at the Inside the Giants. I saw one episode, and Tom Coughlin has too much clout. He even has clout where the general manager has to wait to Coughlin, basically approve the draft.
Hold on. Listen.
So,
Tom Coughlin is the head coach, so ultimately the buck stops with him, and that's the way it should be in any organization. However, it is Tom Coughlin's style to allow the coordinators to do what they do and really not fuss with that soup.
Listen. Why I want him out of here. Now, I know you have a direct.
Wait a minute. You're blaming the coach. You can't give an opinion or give criticism unless you have the facts. Tom Coughlin is not screwing around with McAdoo's plays.
The Giants have never beaten the Colts.
I don't know why you're wasting your energy, Paul. It looks like we lost Dan, and we always appreciate the fireworks every afternoon here on Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Let's make something clear, though. Unless I misheard what she said, she was all over Coach Coughlin because she said the Giants aren't throwing the ball downfield enough. But then when I tried to explain to her that Coach McAdoo formulates the game plan and, in fact, calls all the plays,
correct,
of which Eli has an option to get out or audible and change,
which he had in the old system, too.
And then she's blaming Coach for handcuffing Coach McAdoo and also using player deployment tactics. It doesn't work.
There are some days that Ann calls in and she takes her medicine, and there are other days where she doesn't take her medicine. Today is a non-medication day. That's the best way we could sum that up.
Because those two things are incongruent.
Absolutely. Hey, you don't got to convince me, Paul. I got enough experience.
I thought maybe I heard something wrong.
No, your ears are very clear. Trust me. You know, you used the Q-tips this morning. I promise you. There's no hearing issues.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so she's obviously driving down the wrong way of the one way.
That is the best way to summarize it.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Enough of that. Let's move on, and let's see if we can chime in with do we have Andrew on the line, John, here? Okay, we lost Andrew. All right, the lines are open, though, at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. We'll also get to your tweets at hashtag GiantsChat. But you're right, Paul. Ben McAdoo has a great deal of flexibility in this offense right now. It's not as if Tom Coughlin gave him a laundry list of things that says, hey, you have to do it this way. He has free reign.
He pretty much blew up the whole offense for him.
Exactly. Absolutely. And you have to take into consideration, I mean, if you put some sense into what Ann was alluding to. I mean, with respect to getting the running backs involved, Rashad Jennings, before he got hurt, was an integral part of this offense. I mean, you need him back.
No doubt.
Because he was utilized as a receiver just as much as he was as a runner.
I mean, I think if you have any complaints about what the Giants' offense is right now, it's that big play seems to be missing. Now, you did mention Ann. Let me talk to you for just a second, and I want to try to help you out here, okay? I really want to try to help you out. Jerry Reese did make a comment the other day about how he wants the offense to be more aggressive, and he does want them to attack more. He was not, and let me say this a third time, he was not criticizing Eli for that, okay? This is not about Eli. When he says he wants them to attack more, what he's saying is that philosophically, perhaps, in terms of trying to, A, get the system down, B, trying to become more efficient, C, trying to play with what has been an inconsistent and sketchy offensive line, perhaps the Giants have been philosophically a little bit less daring than maybe Jerry Reese would like. Now, he was also very particular or specific in saying that was his opinion, that he was not being critical of Eli or the coaches about that. It was simply his opinion that, hey, he said, you asked me, what do I think? My opinion is that it'd be nice to be more aggressive. He wasn't being critical of anybody. He wasn't slamming anybody. He wasn't throwing anybody under the bus. It was an opinion he had. And then he also followed up by saying he talks to Coach Coughlin every day. And so there's no stabbing anybody here behind closed doors.
Well, it's convenient for the media to run with some storylines as a result of everything that Jerry Reese says. I took away also, and he alluded to this, Paul, he wants the team to score more points, given the fact that they're having the Colts, the Niners, the Seahawks. I mean, they can't get away with winning games where they're in the low 20s. They have to air it out as a result and take more chances, which is what he was getting to, so that that can translate to more points. Because you're going to get into some offensive shootouts, especially with the way this defense is playing.
Well, let's look at this. The three teams who have beaten the Colts, the Broncos scored 31, the Eagles scored 30, and the Steelers scored 51.
A lot of points.
So that kind of tells you the Giants need to go in thinking they may have to score 30 if they're going to win the game.
Absolutely. I mean, they're going to have to connect toe-to-toe with Andrew Luck and company because you know they're not going to slow things down. And I mentioned this earlier in the week, Paul. This is a bad time to be getting the Indianapolis Colts. Regardless of their struggles, you do not want a team coming off a subpar performance in which it allowed Ben Roethlisberger to set Steeler records all across the board.
Now, if their defense is nicked up and Davis can't go, that is a huge loss for them. And I do think that the Giants are capable of scoring 30. I really do. I mean, it was only a few weeks ago during that three-game winning streak where that offense was doing that. It's not like we're asking them to do something totally out of the box. I mean, Eli is still Eli, and they've still got a real good running back in Andre Williams, who, again, is going through some growing pains as a rookie, trying to pick out the right hole, trying to hit the right hole at the right time, trying to show some patience. I get all of that. But what we do know about him is that he's immensely talented, and we've seen him do good things. Now, not as consistent maybe as you'd like. The line not as consistent as you would like. Not getting necessarily some of the big plays downfield. All right, so you know how you counter that. You know what you have to do then. You got to make big plays on defense. Get three and outs. Get turnovers. Giants have like a dozen interceptions this year. They're right up there amongst the leaders in the NFL, if not number one. Okay, so you got to do that. Then the other thing you've got to do to help out your offense a little bit is make sure you play the Colts at least even on special teams because they will tilt the field on you time and time again. You cannot let that happen.
They have a very strong kicker in Adam Vinatieri, who is 16 of 16 in field goal attempts this season. And don't forget about Pat McAfee, who's one of the best punters
really
in the
good.
NFL.
Really good.
So the combination of those two is a huge advantage for the Indianapolis Colts. And it's an area which has been up and down for the Giants. And that pretty much is stating the obvious. I think things got a little bit blown out of proportion after that Ted Ginn touchdown that they allowed against the Cardinals. It's been better, and Michael Cox sparked the return game. But, you know, this is far from a consistent special teams unit, Paul.
Without question. And I don't know, again, for sure if Mike Harris is being signed off the Lions practice squad today. That's the reports that we keep getting out of Detroit. But he is a guy who certainly, from his reputation and from what I know of him, should help the coverage units.
You look at the turnover factor, and you just touched on this, and the Giants have been very opportunistic throughout the course of the season. In their last game against the Cowboys, Prince's interception helped set up Daniel Fell's touchdown because they shortened the playing field immensely for Eli Manning, and they're going to have to do that.
Look, you cannot underestimate the value of a turnover, folks. Not only does it spark your team, at least in theory, it also demoralizes the other team. And I say this with all due respect to all of the units, the special teams, offense and defense. To me, the two biggest types of plays that can significantly in a heartbeat change the momentum and the flow of a game, a turnover or a big play on special teams that goes, if not the distance, virtually the distance. Those are the two style, and I appreciate a guy throwing a 60-yard pass. I get that. I get it if a running back takes off for 50 yards and you say, wow, what a big play. No, I'm telling you, a turnover or a big special teams play, time and time again, I've seen it. Those are not just firecrackers. Those are cherry bombs. They really change the momentum of a game.
And it changed the game in terms of the Dallas Cowboys. The two fumbles by Larry Donnell gave Dallas a nice field opportunity.
The second one really didn't matter, though.
The second one didn't, but that first one where it's a 7-point game, I mean, that was the turning point of the contest. So it goes to the side of the Giants where they need to protect the ball. And then with respect to their defense, if they're struggling in terms of yardage, the best way to overshadow that and cover that up is to force a turnover. All right, let's get back to the lines at 201-939-4513. So glad you could join us on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Let's head to a guy we haven't heard in quite some time here. Shakes is in Baltimore. Shakes, what's happening?
What's going on, Lance? What's going on, P-Doc?
Shakes. Where you been?
What's going on with y'all, man? How y'all doing?
We're doing well. We want to know what's up with you. We haven't heard from you in ages. Where have you been?
Same old, man. Same old. It's tougher for me to really get through with the new schedule that y'all got. And when I call in, it's harder to really call in. I mean, it's easier to call and get to Barack than to get to y'all.
That's some comparison.
Wow. Well, you know why? He doesn't watch as much tape as I do.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
Okay. But I got a few questions, though.
Go ahead.
First off, let me start light. Jennings, do y'all think he goes this week, or do you think he'll be back for Seattle?
I think it's more realistic for the Seahawks.
Seahawks, I figure that too. All right, now, here's my thing. Okay, the safety play has been bad. Now, the trade deadline just happened yesterday, am I correct, right?
Correct, yes, the deadline was 4 p.m. Eastern yesterday.
Right.
Mark Barron you're alluding to, let me guess. The writing's on the wall here.
It's not even that, but you know what I mean? That's the type of deals I'm talking about. Why we can't do something like that? I heard that Griffin in Tennessee was available. What was up with that?
Well, there were a few Titans players that were rumored to be shipped out of town. Nobody was traded. The Bucs was the only team that made a move. They made two deals. They traded linebacker Jonathan Casillas to the Patriots, and they traded safety Mark Barron, who was their first-round pick in 2012, and they got in return a fourth and a sixth-round pick. So, I mean, those are two valuable commodities that you have to give up that the Rams did to acquire someone like Mark Barron. I mean, did the Giants toy with that? Who knows? I'm sure Jerry Reese was on the phones. He mentioned that at his press conference. He said he was going to look at all available options, but sometimes it's just a matter of are you willing to give up what the opposing team wants in return?
In fact, Jerry Reese used the word active about the phones. Yeah. He said, we've made calls and we've received calls. So the Giants were not asleep at the switch here. I mean, if they felt that there was something they could do, I think they would have done it.
Okay, I give it the benefit of the doubt. And one last thing I want to say. Now, I just heard Ann on, right? And
No, don't even go there.
She confused me with her theories too. But I'm gonna try to, you know, I'm gonna try to pick her brain with this one. And what she was trying to say was,
ooh,
you know,
you really want to go there?
Yeah, I'm gonna try.
You're gonna get lost.
Because
that's a really dark place.
Uncharted territory.
I know. All right, but here's the thing. Now, what I think she was trying to say was that the head coach has to have more onus on these play calling. Now, I know the assistant coaches, I guess they got a lot of say in these play calls, and I get that. But if you see that, you know, we're not going down the field, why don't the head coach overrule that and say, look, man, let's call some plays to be aggressive out here. If everybody else saying we need to be aggressive, then what's the problem? How come the head coach ain't taking more onus?
The only thing I would say to you about that, Shakes, is that the way the Giants system is set up, Tom Coughlin hears the play calls. He knows what's going on in his headset. And there's certainly he's got the option as the head coach at any time to veto something or say, look, can we try this instead? I mean, he's not going to give that up because, after all, he's the number one guy. But it is also the Giants' philosophy that when they formulate the game plans on Monday night going into Tuesday, they spend a lot of time putting that stuff together. And when you're on the sidelines in the middle of a game, usually they believe that's not the time to start making a knee-jerk reaction and then come off the board. Because everything that's on that card that Coach McAdoo has been very, very much thought out. I mean, they've gone through so many hours of tape, so many hours of numbers, so many hours of player scouting reports to come up with this card that you see him with on the sidelines. And so they have a belief in all the homework that they've done, much like I have a belief in all the tape work that I do every week. And you want to put your faith in that when it comes time to call the plays.
Okay.
You follow?
I mean, yeah,
you have to have conviction. If you bust your butt, you know, earlier in the week and you believe in your numbers, you believe in your scouting reports, you believe in what you see on tape, you kind of have to try to stick to that as much as you can during the course of the game.
Shakes, to piggyback off of what Paul is saying, if you're going to make that change in philosophy, that's something that has to be discussed during the week. It's not something that you want Tom Coughlin telling Ben McAdoo in the headset in the middle of the third
quarter.
Let's
start going long.
Yeah, because that's when you get off script and bad things happen.
Yeah.
I got you. Last thing I wanted to say is Jennings was averaging 4.4 yards a carry. Williams is averaging 3.1 yards a carry. He needs to get that average up.
Oh, sure.
Absolutely.
To be successful, we need to have that run game successful, and that average is huge.
Shakes, you know what's happening there? Williams is a rookie, and we understand that. He's got immense talent. He's going to be a star in this league. But the holes at Boston College are bigger than the holes in the NFL. The holes at Boston College stay open longer than they do in the NFL. And in addition to that, Jennings not only has more patience because he has more experience, he seems to, at this point in time, be a little bit better at reading what his linemen are going to do. And I'm going to tell you a story. Bear with me, Shakes, if you have a minute here.
No, go ahead.
I know you say, you know, time is bad during the middle of the day, but bear with me here.
Get comfortable, get a pillow,
good,
a drink.
I'm going to give you a story that illustrates this perfectly. Joe Morris is a dear friend of mine. Joe used to tell me that there were times that he would be in the huddle and Phil Simms would call a play, and it would be to the right side where Carl Nelson was the Giants' stud right tackle. You remember Nelson, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Joe would be in that huddle, and he'd be saying to himself, okay, we're going to call this play off tackle, but I know that Carl can't block that defensive end properly. I know the way it's supposed to go. I know the way it's designed to go. But I know Carl can't seal the edge on this guy because this guy's too strong for him, and it's not going to work. So in Joe's own mind, what he would do is he would hesitate, show extra patience, and when Carl tried to make the block and it collapsed and he got pushed to the outside, Joe would have the patience to hesitate and take the ball inside. So he would actually go where the play was not designed to go because he knew that Nelson, against this particular player, had a weakness, that he could not seal the edge and make the play go according to its design. And that's what you get when you have running backs who understand the, quote, chemistry between the offensive line and the experience to figure out how the play is not only supposed to go, but how you can adapt given the current circumstances. So Joe would say to me, Paul, I can't tell you how many times I knew that Carl couldn't make that block that we were asking him to, and so I took it the other way and wound up gaining the first down. And Parcells would never yell at him for it because that was the kind of instincts that a veteran has to be able to show because he understands the game and he's going to make something out of something that maybe wasn't going to be there. Andre Williams is exactly the opposite right now. He's not
experienced enough to do that. Yeah.
And he doesn't know his blockers well enough to do that. So Andre Williams is going to run the play exactly as it's called. And you know what? If the offensive line isn't blocking it exactly as it's supposed to be blocked, it's going to get shut down. And that's what's going to happen. And Andre Williams is going to run into a brick wall and get a headache. And that's why you see a 3.1 yard per carry average. I can't explain it to you any better than that, and you won't read that in the newspapers, I guarantee you.
And Shakes, appreciate the phone call. It was good hearing from
I
you.
Yeah, I appreciate the bedtime story.
You got it. Hey, anytime Paul can provide that, we are here to kowtow to the audience.
Doubt, man.
And
it always
gets back,
good to talk to you.
You got
man.
It, Shakes.
Thank
Thanks
you
so much. And it gets right. back to the fact that, unlike Jennings, you know, Williams is not going to go off script, as you were touching on, Paul. So
that's
if
not
things
his
break
deal.
Down, you know, he's not going to dance around and try to make something out of nothing, essentially.
And quite frankly, he hasn't earned that right to do it yet because he's only a rookie.
Correct.
You know, you're going to give a veteran leeway to do that because he's a veteran.
Comes with experience, comes with patience. All right, let's head back to the lines. We got Jay in D.C. Jay, welcome to the program. What you got?
Hey, how you doing, Lance and Paul? I got two comments to make. I have to fall back on what I asked you. I never answered the question. The first comment you made kind of a sense about the stats between Eli, Tom, and Peyton. If Eli, well, she is having a good year, you know, Eli's playing pretty good this year. Yeah. Why are we 3-4? Because, I mean, if Peyton can do it and Tom, you know, they averaging about the same stats, but yet we're still 3-4 and they have winning records.
Okay.
What is the issue?
Look at the critical penalties that the Giants have had that have stalled some very significant drives. Look at some of the fumbles that the Giants have had in really bad spots. Larry Donnell in Dallas.
How about the Cardinals?
I mean, I'm pretty sure they had the same issues.
Well, I can't tell you play-by-play what's going on in New England because I don't watch every one of their games and I don't watch every one of their plays. But I know some of the things that have hurt the Giants and also, quite frankly, some inconsistent offensive line play at very important times, too. So,
I got one more comment, Jay, before
I let you continue, though, to emphasize the point here, there is a huge difference between the Patriots, Broncos, and the Giants. New England is plus 11 in turnover differential. The Giants are at zero. Keep that in mind. Denver is plus 4. So what Paul was just talking about, the Patriots and Broncos are not having those costly mishaps at these critical times throughout the course of the season. That's a big reason why they're 3-4. I mean, those things tend to balance out. The Patriots and the Broncos have protected the football.
And, you know, the other thing we don't have, and it was more of a problem earlier in the year for the Giants when they started off with a bad couple of losses, some of the drops.
Yeah.
They were dropping the ball on Eli in the first couple of weeks of the season. I don't know that the Patriots or the Broncos have had as many. We'd have to try to find that. Lately, the Giants have been catching the ball better. But they certainly let Eli down.
And also about the what is up with our secondary? I mean, I just watched the Washington Redskins shut Dez Bryant down. Two rookie cornerbacks shut Dez Bryant down Monday night in the second half. Why aren't our corners as physical as they were on Dez? You know, I look at that. I'm like, they at the bottom of the division.
It heats me up, it's sad. You hit a sore spot for me. You know why? Because Prince Amukamara played a very good game in Dallas. In fact, he played one of the best games a corner could play. And Dez Bryant still had a terrific game. You know why? Because Dez Bryant's a premier receiver. And because Tony Romo threw the ball that night with the precision of a diamond cutter. Even Jerry Jones said it was the best he'd ever seen Tony Romo play. You know, I talked to Prince a day after the Cowboys game, and I said to him, Prince, I've already looked at some of the film on this. I don't think you could have done a whole lot better. To be perfectly honest, I thought you played really, really well. And he said, you know, I was talking to the coaches, and we were trying to figure out on a bunch of those catches, what else could I have done? It was just that Tony made great throws and Dez finished the plays and made the catches he had to make. They get paid, too.
But hold, Paul. Monday night, Tony made great throws and Dez also.
Well,
yet,
Jay,
cornerback,
how about
– and physical whistle,
Jay,
passes because the cornerback hand in there, I mean –
Don't forget about the pass rush. That was a huge difference maker for the Washington Redskins.
But that was blitzing. It wasn't – I mean, they front four wasn't really doing anything.
The Redskins front seven was doing plenty of damage against Tony Romo.
I think
more so than the Giants.
I don't think he's talking so much about Romo being affected as he's talking about Dez making plays. Ryan, you're more concerned about what the secondary did, not so much what the pressure was.
Well, in fairness, though, Dez had a critical drop in that game, too. Let's not forget. That game, okay,
he had a
catch that went right off his chest. That wasn't anything the Redskins secondary did.
That's true.
But that drop, though, if you look at that drop, I mean, they cornerbacks were so physical with them all night. He probably dropped because he hurt feet. You know what I'm saying?
They were physical with Dez. It's like
they got him out of his game early on. That when it started counting, Dez was making drop. He was dropping passes, and they were shutting him down.
Well, and I think
the Giants can't be that.
Well, don't
our secondary can't be. I mean, we have a better secondary than the Redskins.
Don't forget this. Now, I don't have Dez's numbers against the Giants that day. Can you call them up?
Could
you please do that? This is important because I want to make a point here, and I'm not sure if I have the numbers to back it up. So I'm going to have Lance look this up for me. But remember, we said earlier in the show, Chandler Fenner wound up having Dez in a dime situation in the left slot for a 44-yard grab that never should have happened. I'm going to be honest with you. Somebody in the Giants should have called timeout and never let Romo snap that ball. Because Fenner had no chance to stop Dez Bryant on that play. Okay? Let me be brutally honest. Somebody in the Giants, I don't care if it was a coach, I don't care if it was one of the players, somebody needed to call timeout. Because the second that they came out of that huddle, and I was on the sideline, and I saw Fenner and Dez lined up man-to-man in the left slot, I said to the guy next to me, he's a photographer, I said, oh, no, Fenner's on Dez. That's a problem. I saw it. I would have called timeout if I could have done it, but the refs aren't going to listen to me, okay? But that's what needed to happen. Now,
this is what Dez had.
Dez's numbers were 9 for 151, so still 8 for 107 yards would have been his
crazy.
Eight for 107 would have been his total without the 44-yarder against Fenner, which again is something that never should have happened. Now, 8 for 107.
Correct.
You know what? That against Dez is kind of like okay.
I mean, he still had a spectacular game, no matter how
you question.
Try to make
but if
sense
I
t- it,
but if I tell you 8 for 107, take away the 44-yarder, okay, and he had, and we'll take away one target. That's on 12 targets. You know what? That's probably enough. The Giants win the game. To be perfectly honest with you, because that 44-yarder was on third down, it changed field position. It was on the go-ahead touchdown drive that the Cowboys scored. They were never headed again in the game. I'm going to tell you, that was the biggest play of the game.
One more before I hang up. Why can't our defense get teams off on third down?
Well, I think part of it is the injuries, Jay.
We do great on second when they go negative yards. It kick them third down. I mean, team, it kills me.
Well, Jay, listen, appreciate the phone call. We want to squeeze in a few people before the end of the show. I think part of it is injuries. I think Beeson's been in and out of the lineup. DRC has been hurt. When you're relying on guys like Fenner and third or fourth string corners, your defense is going to take a toll, specifically in terms of making stops on third down.
McBride and Thurmond were huge, huge losses to a secondary that they thought was rebuilt and they had spent some money on. Even DRC not being DRC right now because he's trying to play hurt. It's certainly been a problem, but I'm going to give you another reason, an X's and O's reason. The Giants don't finish on their quarterback pressures. How many times have they gotten in the backfield? How many times did they get to Romo and then not finish it off with a sack? This was a problem in the opening game against Detroit when they were in Stafford's face a number of times, came within a hair of getting the sack, and then, in fact, that night, he threw two touchdown passes after the Giants failed to finish a sack. Okay? This pass rush, while getting pressure a lot of times, and they're not that bad in getting pressure, they're not finishing, wrapping up, and getting the sack. That's the biggest reason the Giants are not getting off the field on third down.
They also have a lot of missed tackles, too, specifically against the run,
well,
which was evident in the last two games.
And that's been very sporadic. You know, here's the deal, all right? Again, coach's mentality, I've been doing this a long time, folks. When you have 6 or 7 missed tackles in a game, you're doing okay. When that number gets up to 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, that's bad. Chances are you're going to lose.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Dre in Atlanta. Dre, welcome to the program. What you got?
Hey, what's going on, Paulie? Lance, how y'all doing?
Doing well,
guy.
Dre. How's everything with you?
All right. And I hear everything's going on, you know, hey, you have diehard Giants fans, and they have their own opinion. As skewed as they may be, they still their opinions. But, you know, I think I had a look at some past Giants games, and, you know, since Andre Williams been running, yeah, the holes, some of the holes have been there, but I believe Andre Williams is running scared. He's worried about fumbling. His mind is more so on keeping the ball than actually looking for the holes and being patient and letting the pulling guard make contact with either the linebacker or the D tackle so he can hit the hole. Now, in that Dallas game, he did just that. It seemed like I'm not in his head, but the hole was there and he hit the hole and he wasn't worried about the ball.
Don't use the phrase running scared, because I think that's inaccurate. I think what you're seeing is a guy who's inexperienced. It goes back to the explanation I tried to give you guys 10 minutes ago. If you want to say he's a bit tentative, it's because he doesn't have the experience to believe what he sees and have full confidence in what it is that he either sees or what it is that he needs to do to improvise off of the block that's not being made when the offensive line is inconsistent. This is stuff that comes with experience. He has to grow into it. Please do not use the phrase running scared, because that is not Andre Williams. The guy didn't carry the ball 300 yards or 300 times last year for 2,100 yards to lead the nation running scared. That's not what he is.
Well, I mean, it's different. I mean, I was saying that running scared, but I mean, still, NFL is a lot faster than college. You know, in NFL, you pretty much had your top players on a college team playing on one team, whereas college, probably, five or six on your team will actually make it to the NFL.
There's no question. It's a different level. I get all of that. This guy's going to be a star. Mark my words.
I so agree with you. I mean, that's my namesake, so definitely.
Be patient.
I believe he's going to be a star. He is the future of the Giants. Now, we have the ability to shut down Indy with our offense. You know, we have Ogletree. Ogletree had some practice on his belt. We had some time during the bye to look at the playbook and get familiarized with it. You know, it's time for us to do some things. Justin Pugh, I'm tired of hearing, you know, he calls himself out, but calling himself out and not rectifying the situation doesn't do much for me. He needs to sit down and play a lot better. He needs to play angry with himself, and be more technically sound. You know, he needs to start working on that inside. You know, get their hand inside, because if you look on the tape, everyone's beating him to the inside, and either the running back or Eli has somebody in his face. So he needs to get it together. Him and John Jerry need to talk, go to lunch, do whatever they need to do to figure out how they can fix that issue and start playing in sync. And I think we'll be all right.
All right,
you know, I believe we're going to probably go 9-7 this year. I don't see 8-8. I say 9-7.
All right, Dre, appreciate the phone call. I would say the entire O-line certainly needs to improve. Pass protection got better in the Dallas game, Paul, compared to where they were in the Philly game. It's the running that right now has been very erratic, very up and down.
Yeah, and that's the bread and butter of what this team still wants to be. Everything is still going to be built off of the run, and because of inconsistent run blocking, especially on the inside, Walton has gotten muscled far too many times. They've had the same problem with John Jerry, who, for being a mammoth size of a guy, he's much better in pass protection than he is in run blocking. And that's been an issue. Richburg's making rookie mistakes, but I love the kid, and I think he's going to be really good for a long time. But you have to live with rookie mistakes when you put a rookie in there full time. It's going to happen. And Pugh, I'll be honest with you, he has been inconsistent. He's had two or three really bad games, but then his other games, he's been pretty good. I said this the moment he was drafted. I think he's a good NFL right tackle. I think he's a Pro Bowl NFL right guard. I still believe that he's a Pro Bowl guard, but the Giants need him to play tackle. So you're going to have to live with what he's doing out there. It's ironic. The most consistent guy on that offensive line has been Will Beatty.
Yeah.
Consistently, he's actually been pretty good. He's been okay.
And that was the biggest question mark coming into the season.
Everybody else is like, their graph is like this. You know, danger, Will Robinson, yep. Danger, right?
No, I mean, that's the best way to describe it. It will be interesting to see if they did think about making some tweaks to the alignment over the bye week. I mean, Adam Snyder is a name that we've always dangled out there. Schwartz, I don't think, is going to be ready to play Monday night, Paul. But
you just hit another sore spot. Do we have another minute here?
We have another minute.
You just hit another sore spot with me.
Rant and another venting.
Folks,
what do you got?
Coach Tatino's talking again. He did this to me. He made me do this.
Let's get the violin out.
He made me do this.
Now I'm going to regret
it. Adam Snyder with the Niners has experience, been a guard, been a been a tackle, and also played the jumbo tight end. The Giants don't use a jumbo package in this offense. Coach McAdoo apparently doesn't believe in it. They only use the jumbo package when they're in the goal line set. It is my belief, to help get this power running game going, when you're in a third down and one or a third down and two, rather than go shotgun, bring in Adam Snyder. He's not even getting a uniform these days. They're not even dressing him on game day, okay? He needs to dress because he played the jumbo tight end in San Francisco. Get him a jersey on Sunday, and when it's third and one or third and two, put Snyder in as the extra offensive lineman to be the extra tight end and slam that ball down the opponent's throats. Okay? Go back to what Vince Lombardi said. Keep it simple. Let them know what's coming. We're going to do it anyway. That's how you get the power running game going.
And this is what happens when Paul Dottino is not involved in the meetings during the bye week. All of this energy just adds up, builds up, and he lets it out here.
You
on
had to bring
line.
Up Adam Snyder.
How lucky the fan base is.
You had to bring up Adam Snyder.
I know how to pour salt on the wounds. With that being said, we want to remind you that listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now. Enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That is DraftKings. com. So glad you could join us here on a Wednesday. Big Blue Kickoff Live, which is with you each and every weekday from noon p.m. Eastern to 1 p.m. Eastern. We'll have our regular scheduled programming the next 2 days because basically everything was pushed back one day, Paul. A Wednesday is a Thursday and a Thursday is a Friday. You and Robin will set the scene for
Roman
Tom
Oben.
Coughlin's press conference.
Yes, Roman Oben tomorrow, MSG, 11 o'clock live, and then we'll be back here, Roman and I, 12 o'clock, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Until then, I got to go watch more film.
For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Have a good one.
All right, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.